For the first time in 15 years, Ciccone truly are back. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Hello, gang. Welcome to episode 408 of Motorsport 101. And ladies, gentlemen, friends outside the binary, they did it. Ducati are the world champions of MotoGP again. You never thought you might see this day again.
It's about damn time.
It has happened. It is here. It has finally arrived. Francesco Bagnaia is your 2022 MotoGP world champion. And we'll talk about how he got there over the next 40 minutes or so, because this is our final MotoGP race review of 2022. Sigh. But we had a Valencia Grand Prix to get through first, a traditional MotoGP season finale. No pandemics here. We're back at Valencia to close things off. And the first MotoGP title decider in half a decade, even though it didn't really feel like a decider, but God damn it, Dorna tried.
Bless their hearts.
They really did try. It was a 23-point gap going into this final round of only 25 available. So you can already do tell by the math, it needed a miracle swing for Fabio to win this title. And God bless them, they tried. Like, everybody else in this weekend might as well not have bothered showing up. Like, they were hardly ever on camera. It was either our handsome himbo from France or our drunk driver from Italy. Pretty much all the way through. But we'll get into that. But first,
what a championship pair, huh?
How did we get to this point? First and foremost, the slightly ill but always intelligent as ever, Cam Buckley. Hello, sir.
Slightly. Slightly. The only people feeling more sick than me right now are the HRC engineers back in Japan.
Yes, he really is that poorly. In fact, Cam might pass out at any moment during this recording.
we are currently recording this a bit late because I put my head down thinking, having in a sick stupor, misread the time we were going to record.
By 3.5 hours.
Look, we all make mistakes. Some are bigger than others. Mine happened to be huge.
It's like you're standing in front of Chernobyl saying, that was kind of a big mistake.
Not great, not terrible.
Yeah, it happens. You know, it happens. Also, we have RJ O'Connor with us. Hey, man.
So this is the red wave that everybody was blowing a bunch of hot air about. This is the one that actually delivered on all the empty promises that it made.
I see what you did there. That's clever. Yes, this was
the funniest thing is we're recording this on the 9th of 11th, which is the day after United States midterm elections. Noted former baseball player and all-around sleazy guy Len Dykstra is out here trying to hit up now disposed Colorado politician Lauren Boebert.
I just have to look upon these fools and just say rest in piss, bozo.
we're smoking that Republican pack.
It's like, dude, could you not, I hate to get all political on this podcast, but could you imagine how badly they would be losing if the Democrats were actually trying and if these elections were gerrymandered to hell?
Just think, both of them last won a championship in 2007, yet Ducati are the ones who won the championship before Ferrari.
Oh, also, on an unrelated note, Binance is pulling out of a merger with FTX because crypto prices keep crashing. Maybe that's the real red wave, is all the red on the balances, these crypto balances. But we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about certainly the MotoGP season finale of all time.
yes, this was a thing. Like, on a side note there, I love that Alpine's crypto sponsor tried to buy out Mercedes' crypto sponsor in a fascinating look as to how that would be if that happened in real life. That would be hilarious. But yeah, we'll be talking a bit about MotoGP season finale in Valencia. We'll be talking about our new world champion, the startling differences in approach to this final weekend, Ducati and their place in the sport right now, and a little bit of some of our favorite moments of this season as well. Don't worry, there will be a season review of the entire 2022 MotoGP season next week alongside Formula One's Brazilian Grand Prix. You know, I'm sure we're all gassed up for another sprint weekend, aren't we, chaps?
Oh, no.
Don't all rush
all right, it. I'm strategically picking now to pass out.
yep. See you in half an hour. I'll get the places you can find us in the going while we resuscitate Cam via smelling salts. You can find us on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. Our personal handles are at Harrison101HD, at RJ O'Connell, and at CBuckley917. We are on Instagram at motorsport101pod, and you can find all of our details on our website, motorsport101.com, which, by the time you're listening to this, part one of my, I call it my extended notes on the 2022 season. I take notes after every Grand Prix I race, and I put them all together and I mash them into something resembling a written season review every year. The first part is up right now. By the time we get to the season review itself, we'll probably have all three up by then. It's a special, it's over 3,000 words on Honda, Suzuki, and KTM so far. So if you want my thoughts in a little bit greater detail and in long form, check that out already. And if you really, really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon. Patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our shows live before they go out to the public. $10 gets you supporters club access to our Discord server where you can listen to these shows live as they're being recorded. So, without further ado, let's break down the season finale, the decider, the 2022 Grand Prix of Valencia.
So it all came down to Valencia for MotoGP's first final round decider since 2017. Sure. Fabio Quartararo tried everything he could in qualifying, but he could only manage to finish fourth, which he would keep through the race despite some desperate lunges against the Ducatis. Francesco Bagnaia had a very tentative weekend, struggling with his front. He could only qualify in eighth after making a mistake on his final qualifying lap. He then had a part of his bike's aero break off early on, but he was able to safely limp his Desmo DC GP22 home in ninth place to clinch the MotoGP World Championship and become the first Italian MotoGP World Champion since Valentino Rossi in 2009. Wonder what happened to him. The first Ducati World Champion since Casey Stoner in 2007. The first Italian World Champion on an Italian bike since Giacomo Agostini in 1972. 21 plus 42 really does equal 63. And of course, we got plenty of like weird championship celebrations.
But
this one was relatively tame, given recent times.
Yeah, it was just like the previous numbers, his old bikes, and then the gold helmet, which has become like synonymous with MotoGP and World Superbike Championship winners. It's like everybody now. I think it was Marc Marquez that started this trend of having gold champion helmets, and now everybody's copied him. Like, I think he was first.
That gold video game pixelated one is still my favorite.
Oh, like
level seven one.
I think I have the baby version down here in front of my desk. It was like I bought a
Joey. Make that. I'll buy a real one.
Yeah,
like, I know how much they cost. I don't care.
Yeah, like seriously, they are so cool. Like,
fellas, give us some thoughts on our brand new world champion, and also kind of talk us through both Quartararo and Bagnaia's approaches with the final weekend, because let's be real, with a 20 point 23-point gap and 25 points available. There is definitely going to be a difference in how these two approach the weekend. For one, it was just a matter of, I think, don't fall off the bike. For the other, it's just like, I have to win at all costs.
Pretty much. I mean, even if Pecco had fallen off the bike, it was not going to matter because the Yamaha just isn't fast enough at this point. And bless his heart, Fabio tried everything he could.
He left everything on the table. If you could say one thing about Fabio's weekend at Valencia, God loves a trier. And he gave it everything he had. You could see him in qualifying. The front end of that bike was bouncing everywhere. He was over the limit, trying to squeeze every thousandth he could. He was far more aggressive in the early stages of the race than he normally is, because he had to be. He had to really, because he didn't get a great start. He dropped a couple of spots down to fifth or sixth. He was dogfighting both factory Ducatis, Bagnaia and Miller, in the early going. He actually whacked off Bagnaia's right side aero winglet on the right-hand side of his bike because he almost lost the rear trying to defend from Bagnaia overtaking him when Miller gave him a block pass. And of course that actually quite badly hampered Bagnaia's race because it just overcooked his tires and he had to basically nurse the sucker home. But Fabio tried, but even when he was in open air, he was maybe a tenth or so quicker than the other guys around him.
And so he was the fastest, but just not by enough, and certainly not enough to affect any kind of pass, because, I mean, bikes don't pass here well in a good year.
Yeah.
When bikes can pass. This run around, there really was not a lot of action unless you are, I don't know, some dude on a KTM.
Yeah, Lord Binder, who
Binder. he just has a knack for doing this, doesn't he?
We keep asking him to pass some frickin' fracking bikes, and today and this weekend he did the thing.
Yeah.
Somewhere Ryan Eric King was punching air.
Yeah. I literally tweeted on our M101 podcast account, like, pass some fucking bikes, Brad. Ryan Garrett King, probably. Was the response I gave him. Look, Binder, he's done it again. The third time he's finished second place this season. He did it at the opening round in Qatar, and he did it at the final round in Valencia. Art and symmetry simulates life. He took half a second out of Alex Rins on the final round. Well, by the way, Alex Rins won this race. I just thought I'd point this out. But in Suzuki's final race, as Alex Rins would win from flaming, race to flag.
One flaming middle finger FU to the bosses back in Japan of just what they're throwing away.
Alex
two
Rins
wins in the final three rounds.
Yeah,
I don't think Suzuki are unjustified in their reasons why they felt like they had to pull out. But at the same time, it's just like, man, they got to be kicking themselves now.
Right. It's just two wins out of the final three, and I believe only Francesco Bagnaia scored more points than him in the final six races. Rins actually ended up finishing seventh in the championship with a Suzuki that was the fifth best bike in the field. Rins was insane to close out the season.
His reward is going to a satellite Honda.
Way to go, Alex.
By the way, I mean, we had testing the last 2 days as well, and word from the paddock about the new Honda is not positive.
Yeah, I believe Marc Marquez said the term was, on this bike, we are not winning the world championship. Good sign.
Word out of the paddock is that Alex Rins got off of that bike and had a 1,000-yard stare.
The Fernando Alonso one. If you know, you know.
If you know, you know. Look, talking about, we got to talk a bit about Bagnaia, obviously. I mean, this was not his weekend by any stretch of the imagination. He, even before the aero incident with Fabio, he was struggling pretty much all weekend. He was not confident with the front of his bike at all. He was very tentative. His qualifying session, he put a banker in eighth, but then went off, I believe, at turn eight on his final.
Both of them did.
Yeah, both of them.
Fabio and Bagnaia both kind of blew their final laps.
Yeah, and so Fabio had to start eighth. you know, that's pretty much exactly where you don't want to start a MotoGP race, given how hectic the early laps can get. Being smack dab in the middle of the field is never ideal. And like I said, as the aero came off his bike, he had to pretty much nurse it home, but he didn't fall off, and that's the important thing. And look, looking at Bagnaia's season overall, 7 wins. It's an erratic sort of year, because we talked about this in the pre-show, Cam. Like, 265 points to win a title in the biggest MotoGP season ever at 20 races. That's a low number.
Everyone left. Everyone had sections of this year that were really poor.
This is like an old-fashioned rock fight. Everybody's just dragging each other down into the muck with them.
It's 2014 LMP1. It's just whoever's car broke the least. But yeah, Pecco left a lot of points on the table with mistakes, with Ducati really trying to find their feet with this hybrid GP21/22. Fabio, his bike wasn't fast enough, but he also made mistakes overriding it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's rip this bandage off. Aprilia just fizzled out hard to end the season. A double engine DNF in this race cost them position in the championship. KTM, for all the shit we give them, finished second in the team's title this year.
KTM, second! And you know, because not only was Brad Binder second, Miguel Oliveira backed him up in fifth, and that's 31 points, and that was enough.
Against the no-score from Aprilia.
Yeah, thanks to the no-score from Aprilia, they leapfrogged them and Pramac to end up finishing second in the team's championship on the final race. Yeah, the manufacturers was real close as well. Second to fourth was covered by just 16 points. KTM was on the back of that train, but Yamaha and Aprilia were fighting it out. But yeah, it was
Aprilia crazy. Lost position in all three championships. Just
right at the death.
Tell us what you told everyone on your blog, which will be out by the time we put. Tell us what you told the world about Aprilia on this podcast.
This will be in part two. There's a good chance of it being out by the time you read this, but if not, I'll give you a sneak preview as to what I said in that post. Aprilia will be gutted. They blew second as a manufacturer and second as a team. Read that sentence again. Aprilia will be gutted. They didn't finish second in both championships.
Yeah, I mean, this year they went from probably the laughing stocks of MotoGP. The consistent also rans. The you can only do so much to polish a turd. The famous quote about their bike from a few years ago too. They left a lot of points on the table. They legitimately could have taken the Riders' Championship and second in the other two if they had just cleaned themselves up a bit, both Aleix and the team.
Both Aprilia has failed to make the flag. Maverick was a little bit later. He was running last when he had to park it, and Aleix was early on and had to park the bike. A miserable end to an otherwise outstanding season from the boys from Italy. Look, in the grand scheme of things, it's still an incredible year, but they're going to be gutted that they left some shit on the table that could have turned an outstanding season into an absolutely remarkable, ridiculous season.
Well, look, if you're Aprilia right now, you know what you do? You build on it.
Yeah, absolutely. You
take
something.
This year, you take the lessons you learn, you run it back again. Well, I guess we can talk about a miserable end to a miserable season.
Who was that before?
HRC in their 40th anniversary year.
Marc Marquez crashed from fifth.
How the fuck did he qualify second?
And 2/10 off pole against Jorge Martin, who no one had more poles than him this season. He had 5 on the year. Only Bagnaia matched him with 5.
How on earth? Marc Marquez is still capital H him, and yet, I think very well put in the broadcast, he's ready to start winning again. Honda? Oh, God. Pol Espargaro crashed.
Yeah,
I don't think he's ever been so happy to finish a race early. Alex Marquez crashed. I don't think he's ever been so happy to finish a race early.
Have you seen how happy Alex Marquez is with his new Gresini Ducati? He's like a kid at Christmas. He's just ripped the back of it. He's got a brand new Power Rangers Megazord. He's so happy right now.
He just got the Nintendo 64 with the Atomic Purple controller.
Oh, baby.
You know.
You're going to have to peel him off the ceiling after that. I mean, he was so fucking happy. Like, he wouldn't believe it.
Paul Espargaro was fist bumping and joking around with anyone he could find, getting on a KTM. You need to know.
Back on a KTM.
The Gas, as we should say technically, because that's the rebranded Tech Free team.
It's a sticker.
Call it what it is.
It's a sticker on a KTM.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, that kind of says all you need to know about Honda. But, you know.
Honda, bottom of the manufacturer's championship, won 155 points. Probably their worst season in 40 years.
Oh, yeah. This is the worst season they've had since they stubbornly refused to go two-stroke and instead tried to build an oval piston V4.
Then that was what, 82?
79-82. Now, this isn't as bad as that, because back then it was just a joy to get the bikes to the flag.
Mm.
But, man. Mark, I described how that bike turns in qualifying is. It's like it turns in installments. It's not especially great in a straight line. It has major problems braking in a straight line. It's not good at corner entry, corner apex, or corner exit. It's not reliable, and it's hard to ride. Other than that, it's perfect.
Yeah. Good luck, yo, man.
Mir and Rins. I think it says all it needs to be said when Honda said, "Oh, you'll get a statement. You'll get a statement from Mir and Rins." It is now. It's been over 24 hours since the end of testing, and there's been no statement.
Oh boy, it's going to be a long winter of discontent in the HRC camp.
They need to get this right by the Sepang test.
Yeah. Have we forgotten that Marc Marquez is under contract at the end of next season?
Oh my God.
Yeah, and he's in his Mike Trout era.
Oh yeah. Turns 30 in February. And he's got 1 year left on his current deal.
He is not.
He's
asking
now
for
openly. He's openly criticizing the bike. If anything, this year they should probably give him a pay increase because he qualified second on that.
We're going to be doubling the races, so I deserve double the pay.
Give me $50 million a year. Fuck it. Give me that Shohei Ohtani money.
Yeah, I mean this next. This next 12 months could define Honda's direction for a very, very long time indeed.
Yeah, this is a little season preview, but we don't mind. Like, this, like, they now have got no excuse for rider depth and quality. Like, you could maybe argue that was an excuse of the last couple of years.
They have three of the best motorcycle riders on Earth.
You've got two of the last four world champions and Alex Rins, who has been a title contender in previous seasons. Like, Alex Rins has got top three championship finishes in his history with Suzuki. He's a damn good bike rider. Like, you know, multiple race winner. You've got three outstanding riders in your camp. You have no longer got an excuse.
You have your best rider lineup since you rocked up with Andrea Dovizioso as your weak link alongside Casey Stoner and Danny Pedrosa.
Yeah, in an era which Honda sucked in until right at the end of the prototype era. You know, like, holy shit.
They would kill to suck that bad now. This is so much worse.
Mm. So, on the other end of the scale, let's talk about Ducati. Yeah.
Let's talk Ducati. First triple crown since 2007.
Mm.
They win the rider's title, they win the team's title, they win a constructor's title. 8 out of their 22 bikes 8 out of the 22 bikes next season, and the factory takes up half the top 10 spots in the championship. So, Dre, I think I know where this may be going. Do they control this sport?
Yeah. Short answer.
Overwhelmingly so.
To give Ducati some credit, and I will give them a lot of credit here, like, when Luigi Deligna took over as technical director of this team back in 2013, it's taken them a while. It's taken them 9 years to get to this point. But they have done everything right to get to that point. Because I think Cam has been a fan long enough to know what I'm talking about here. Do you remember how shit the GP 13 and 14 was back then?
Oh, I remember. Dre. That Oof. Was some of the set.
They were so bad. Valentino Rossi came over and I'm going to do the exact same thing I did at Yamaha. I'm going to turn these ruffians into some world champions. And he gave up after 2 years.
Dude, couldn't do it.
They were so bad. Nicky Hayden, God rest his soul, was having to work to stay ahead of the CRT bikes.
Yeah,
they were so bad that you could buy a motorcycle that could give Ducati the works.
Yeah, it was rough back then, and it was the GP15. That was the bike that was the foundation for Ducati to change their fortunes. The 15 was a game changer. It was small. It was nimble. It kept that explosive power that the Desmond Desci valve.
Yeah, watching that bike in combat, and it was combat.
Oh, yeah.
Phillip Island 2015. You're like, okay, they've got something here.
Oh yeah.
And it took quite a while, because the running joke about Ducati on this podcast, at least for 7 years, is okay, we need to make the bike turn, so we're going to add 20 horsepower.
Dude, remember at the start of the season where they made like this the friggin' weird Ducati hybrid, and it's,
well, that's just terrible
out of the box, and we're thinking, oh my god, they completely screwed this up.
Well, that's just it. They were bragging preseason about the extra horsepower. They went out, and Pecco didn't like it. And by all accounts, the people on the ground decided, okay, last year's engine was more rideable. The rest of the bike is still good enough. Let's just use last year's engine. Premac used this year's engine to get a whole bunch of poles and nothing else. The factory Ducatis used a hybrid engine to win all three championships.
Yeah.
And the thing about the Ducati as well is that it's the great combination of let's not call it easy to ride, because it's not like the Suzuki, where it's a very benign motorcycle. But you can get up to its performance limits very quickly, and it has a lot of lap time potential. And that's the key.
I want to say 12 wins on the year for Ducati out of 20. Bagnaia had 7. Bastianini had 4. Miller won in Japan. So I want to say 12 wins on the year for Ducati as a manufacturer. And like their riders had all 5 of their, like 5 riders of the 8 they had were in the top 9 of the championship. Bez won Rookie of the Year with more points than all the other rookies combined. Luca Marini had a big improvement this season as a rider, up to 120 points. In there with people like Marquez, Vinales, ahead of Joan Mir. Like, the floor is now good. The ceiling is we can now win a championship with multiple riders.
The ceiling is now that they can lock out podiums on a good weekend.
Yeah, they're this good. Like, the myth of Yamaha tracks are gone. Ducati can win anywhere. Well, that's just
it as well. The bike turns. The only real flaw with the Ducati now, honestly, is that dust off the classic line, it's always a little bit front tire critical. But they have enough riders who are good at managing their tires, especially with Bastianini and Bagnaia, which, God, what a factory lineup. just raw talent in spades. They can kind of mitigate that. And then the rest of the bike is so good. Even if on a given weekend, Fabio is faster, and Fabio was faster this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
He's not faster in qualifying because the Ducati on fresh tires is just stupid fast. And how are you going to pass it? Even if you get past them, you better run as far as your bike will take you until you get to that straight.
Right. And overall, to get to this point, I want something I wanted to make the point of as well. This was not a fluke from Ducati. Like, they have been building up towards this for years and years, because with Japan complacent and withdrawing and Suzuki now gone, Ducati have been the ones to push the technological needle in this sport forward for the last half decade. Look at the major ways that the bikes have gotten faster in the last 6-7 years. Ducati were the ones that created the standardized ECU package that everybody now uses. They started the aero revolution of attaching winglets to their bikes and the aerodynamic gains that came from it.
With that GP15?
With the GP15, that's where it started, and it developed, and now everybody copied them. They were the only people that were prepared to sell multiple versions of their bike down the field to help improve development. Like, they okay, well, half of them were the previous year's bike, but it's still led them to gather more data and nurture a lot of their younger Italian riders that have come through.
Data matters.
Of course.
If you're coming over from Formula One, look at where Honda was with McLaren.
Mm.
With the issues they had gathering data with one team, just having two teams gathering them data for the last few years, and look at where they've gone.
Yeah,
Look at where Alpine is in terms of power unit reliability.
and look at in this sport, look at where the inline fours are. It's going to be very weird. Next year, there's only going to be two inline fours on the entire grid.
Right.
The Yamaha of Franco Morbidelli and the Yamaha of Fabio Quartararo.
Indeed.
And that data, that lag, and with tires, with chassis, with everything, that matters.
Yeah, and let's not forget the shapeshifter devices. That was Ducati. They were the first ones to have the whole. Yeah, I mean, it's done fundamental damage to the raceability of these machines, and we'll talk about that more in our season review.
We're having ourselves a "I feel bad for our country, but this is tremendous content" moment.
Right, but they created the shapeshifters front and rear that have enabled these bikes to reach record speeds, record lap times, and again, they've forced the field to copy their technology to try and stay with them. This Ducati world title, this triple crown they've had, has been coming for a long time, and they finally were able to develop a machine that they didn't have to compromise on rider quality with, and now they are the pinnacle of this sport. And this has been a long time coming, and I believe they now control this sport.
Right now, they are at the point as far as technical innovation. I mean, and we thought it was coming the last 2 years because, I mean, in 2020, Marquez goes out for the year. Okay, it's probably going to be between Fabio and Dovizioso. That didn't pan out at all.
No.
Yeah, remember, the team did everything that they, seemingly everything that they could to alienate Andrea Dovizioso on the way out.
And they were atrocious in 2020. The factory team was barely capable of scoring points at times.
Right. It was they couldn't handle their rear tire spinning up everywhere. It's too much sauce.
And then last year, it probably would have had a better shot at the title, but Pecco was still really damn raw this year. He left a lot of points on the table, very self-inflicted.
I was saying it
at the start of 2020. I'm like, He's got the speed. He's got to get everything else.
Yeah, it's amazing. He's the first, I believe, he's the first MotoGP world champion of this era to win with 5 DNFs to win the title.
Congratulations, you are the worst winner we've ever had.
Which is amazing. But again, it goes to show you how bizarre this year has been from a competitive beaten-up standpoint as well. But Ducati are the needle movers in this sport now, and it's going to be up to Japan to counter and come up with a response, because right now an Italian team is the best team in the field, and I'd argue the Europeans are now running this sport. Because KTM and Aprilia aren't far behind, and Aprilia should have really been second this year.
KTM, we've been here before with KTM, so right. I pumped the brakes on that. But Aprilia, I would say as far as the quality of the equipment that they're giving these riders, absolutely Ducati and Aprilia, I think, have leapfrogged the grid.
Right.
And given everything coming out of this week's test, it doesn't look like Japan has much of a response in the short term, either Honda or Yamaha.
Get it right by Sepang, or there are
If Marquez breaks glass and leaves Honda, where can he go? Wherever he wants.
I was about to say that whole thing about how Lynn Jarvis won't sign him. Yamaha will clear a Lynn Jarvis sized space off of their factory team if it means they could sign Mark Marquez.
You're probably right. But because like, imagine the negotiating power Mark Marquez is going to have next year if it becomes the Mark Marquez sweepstakes. How big a check is Honda going to have to write him if he says
a big enough check they can write him. The biggest check they can write him is a bike that doesn't suck.
And there's no guarantees on that one right now.
I think it's a guarantee quite the other direction because, when you have three championship winning / championship level riders all telling you, hey, your bike is atrocious. And all you've brought are lots of small changes.
Right. That
haven't really fixed any of the problems with the bike. To say nothing of Fabio's day where he basically said, yeah, this engine feels the same as it did last year.
Yeah, and they took a step back from Misano the last test, which is ungood.
You don't think they juiced that engine a little bit to convince him to resign, do you?
Well,
surely not.
I don't think Yamaha would do that.
Oh, the team that was running illegal engines to start 2020 wouldn't do that.
You know, you make a good point. That is something. I'll say that much for certain. Like I said, a lot more of this will be on our season review in next week, but also I wanted to give a sneak preview towards that as well by talking a little bit about the season at large. Gentlemen, what were some of your favorite moments to come out of MotoGP in 2022?
I want to ride it back to the beginning. I want to wind it back to Enea Bastianini in Qatar.
Oh, yes.
Grassini Racing's first top flight victory in 16 years, the first since the passing of founder Fausto Grassini. I mean, just what a scene. And as it turns out, it wasn't just a fluke. He could keep doing this. Enea Bastianini could keep doing this on this package. And it rewarded him with a factory ride that many people had probably earmarked for someone like a Johann Zarco or a Jorge Martini. Just jumped a lot of them.
Yeah, he really did. The first win in Grand Prix motorcycle racing history from a female-owned team, or a woman-owned team, I should say. A literal, genuine, historic moment in bike racing history. And just the shock factor. We never gave, but we thought Bastianini would be good. We didn't think Bastianini was going to freaking win the opening round at a cakewalk, and then win four times this season. Established himself as a top three runner in the championship. Could very easily be up there in the betting for next year's championship. Enea Bastianini, wow. Probably the breakout star of MotoGP this year, I would say. Relative to the field.
Won't hear any arguments from me there.
Yeah. Padovani has done a very good job of keeping what her widow, her late husband, had built for.
Absolutely. Cam.
You know, I said it in preseason. I said it on the season preview. I was mocked. I was laughed at. Aprilia dragging themselves up and finally getting that elusive first win. and in relatively dominant fashion.
The only man in his real, and any real man in his wheelhouse was Jorge Martin, who we all know Martin on a good day is as fast as anyone in this sport.
The real Mr. Saturday.
Oh God. But he made Aleix work for it, but he just didn't have an answer for him over the course of the race. And let's not forget, Aleix Espargaró made his Grand Prix debut in 2004. He's the only man left in the field who rode an 800cc prototype. He debuted the same year of the Athens Olympics.
Good Lord.
That's how far long ago Aleix Espargaró made his Grand Prix debut. And that was his 200th Grand Prix start.
And you never think of him as like a really old, ancient dude.
No, he's only like 33, I think. You know, he's not a super old rider. I mean, he's just been around for, I think he debuted at 17. He's only 33. He's not like massively old. He's just been around, and we all know he cut his teeth as a CRT rider, the king of the CRT riders. He was the best of the bunch there by a country mile, but we always gave him a short rope because it just, when he got a proper chance, he blew it against Maverick Vinales, and we all just thought, well, he's just cooked. But
that sure swung back around this year.
Oh God, he beat Maverick Vinales.
He beat the brakes off of Maverick this year
by 90 points. Yeah, destroyed him. Like, Maverick got obliterated this season. And yeah, like, Aleix Espargaró on his 200th Grand Prix start finally gets his first win. An incredible moment, and a great story of perseverance and what
story
hard work
of betting on yourself. I mean, the win, and then four podiums in a row.
Mm.
And I mean, it really only derailed right at the end. As far as the actual championship fight, just because whether he was leaving, I mean, he left a bunch of points on the table with a user error with the scoring pylon. But simultaneously, a year of tremendous improvement and what could have been.
Oh God, it's a very polarizing season for Aleix Espargaró. And I wanted to talk for my moment. I wanted to talk about another Aleix Espargaró moment, and that was his comeback at Assen. Assen was one of the better races of the year, and I'll be real with you, it's been a down year for this sport. There's no doubt about that, in my opinion, but this was special. Like early on, Fabio Quartararo goes for a hellacious dive bomb on Aleix. He misses, he hits the side of his bike, puts Aleix in the gravel, he's able to keep the bike going. He drops down to 15th place, but then his pace is so strong and his passing is so perfect, he's able to climb all the way back up to 6th. And then on the final lap of the race, the final corner, he passes two bikes. I think it was Jack Miller and I want to say Brad Binder into the final chicane at Assen, passes the pair of them. To finish
that was like our consensus Scotty up until Ross Chastain broke the rules.
Yeah, and probably defied the laws of physics at that point.
Yeah.
But dear God almighty, Aleix Espargaró's comeback from 15th to 4th, and to finish only 3 seconds off the win, a race that Bagnaia had led from lights to flag, is remarkable. Bagnaia openly admitted, no, if Aleix was in the fight, he would have won this race. No question, is what he basically said. And yeah, that was for me the moment that showed that no, Aleix can compete for this championship. There is no doubt about it. He's not going away. And he went into that summer break just on another level. And hey, Maverick finished third that day, so they actually had Aprilia's best ever weekend in MotoGP that weekend, with a third and a fourth place finish.
That's not bad for a team that nobody wanted to ride for. That was not bad
for a team that Moto2 prospects were refusing to jump up into the Premier class for, as recently as 2 years ago. Another one as well.
Yeah. Robert's turned that down. Yeah, go on.
Damn it, America. We fumbled the bag. Marc Marquez missed 8 races this year.
Mm.
and finished 13th in the championship, beating the next Honda riders on their combined points.
More points.
He's got a pole position on this bus.
More points than Paul Espargaró and Alex Marquez combined.
Which is just... How the fuck? And let's not forget, first half of the season, his arm was 34 degrees out of rotation.
Yeah.
It was healed back together like the broken stick that his arm was.
Four front row starts in the last six races since he came back. He's back. He's ready to win a championship.
Yeah, I mean, he went down in Sunday's race running fifth with an unspecified technical problem nagging him the whole way. What was it? He had the third most points of anyone since he came back behind Rins and Bagnaia.
It was actually sixth in the end. That last crash did nub it, bumped a few guys above him, but he was as good as anyone on the way back, almost certainly. I mean, a pole, a second place, regularly in the top six. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Marc Marquez, everything about Marc Marquez is spectacular. Just is at this point.
This dude got pole at Motegi.
In the rain. Absolutely.
He's still that dude.
He's still him.
There was a lot of good out of this season for what was supposed to be such a crappy year for MotoGP.
And we'll break a lot more of that down next week in our MotoGP season review. We'll go up and down the field. We'll look factory by factory. We'll talk a bit about the future and the way the sport is right now. If you want to see a sneak preview of some of that and some of my notes towards that, again, check out the website. At least two parts of that season review will be up on the website before the time we get the podcast out there as well. Also, Formula One Brazil this weekend, so that'll be on next week's show as well. Sprint weekend, potential rain. Yeah. You know, if it rains, it probably makes it even easier for Verstappen, to be honest. Actually, stay dry.
The last chance, I feel, for Lewis Hamilton to get a win this season. If it's
I don't think so. This is the... Probably, if we're looking at it, the last chance that anyone has to stop the win percentage record going down.
Yeah.
Because that is under threat.
If Max runs the table, he takes the all-time win percentage record for the modern format, which is just crazy. I think it's Schumacher's 04 is what he's trying Correct. To target here. I think it's something like 72.7% or something crazy like that. If Max wins 16 out of 22, we're in for the most, arguably the most dominant season of all time. Yeah, like we are, like he's at third place, he's 90 feet away, and he's only got one out. He's got a good chance of making it home. Let's see what Verstappen can do. So that and our season review of MotoGP for 2022 will be out next week. But until then, basically you can find us one more time, YouTube, facebook.com/motorsport101, Instagram, motorsport101pod, our website, motorsport101.com, for all of our content on there as well. And if you like us, back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. I've been Andre Harrison. Also, thanks to, our great co-host, RJ O'Connell and Cam Buckley. Until Brazil.
I'm still alive.
He's still alive. He hasn't passed out. God bless him. Until next time, sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Fix some fucking bikes, Honda.